This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Tomorrow, the lower Kuskokwim River will open to gill nets for 12 hours from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. The opening applies to the federal waters of the Kuskokwim River from the river's mouth to the National Wildlife Refuge boundary at Aniak. In these federal waters, gill nets are limited to 6-inch mesh, 45 meshes in depth. Net lengths are restricted to 150 feet above the Johnson River and 300 feet below the Johnson River. Net lengths cannot stretch across more than half of a waterway. King salmon caught in these nets can be kept, as can king salmon caught in fish wheels, dip nets, beach seines, and hook and line. All gill nets must have an attached keg or buoy with the fisherman's first initial, last name, and address written on it. Phone numbers are helpful but not required. Salmon spawning tributaries remain open to gill nets. Following tomorrow's opening, a portion of the Middle River will remain open beginning at 6 p.m. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is lifting federal restrictions on king salmon fishing from the refuge boundary at Aniak downriver to the bluffs below Kalskag. These waters will then fall under state management, joining the Middle and Upper Kuskokwim in full-time open subsistence fishing that remains open until further notice. This decision to open the waters in front of Kalskag follows precedent from previous years and comes about a week earlier than past summers. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service made the decision to open these waters in consultation with the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. The reasoning is that Kalskag area fishermen need more time to achieve the same salmon harvest as lower river fishermen, since Kalskag area salmon catches are reduced during federal openings. The entire Kuskokwim River is scheduled to fall under state management beginning at the 1st of July. Turning to the courts, 15 subsistence fishermen were summoned to the Bethel Courthouse on Monday for fishing violations. One fisherman did not appear. The rest pled no contest to minor offenses issued around the June 8th Kuskokwim set net opening. Alaska wildlife troopers charged most of the fishermen for using too long of a net. The opening allowed a 60-foot-long net, and troopers cited most of the fishermen for using nets more than twice that length. The court charged these fishermen with a minor violation and a $300 fine. Some fishermen said they were unaware of the regulations. One said that he just neglected to measure his net. Another fisherman said that if he had known of the 60-foot limit, then he would never have put out a net. The rest of the fishermen who appeared in court were also charged with minor violations. Troopers charged four fishermen for fishing during a closed period. Troopers charged one fisherman for drifting during a set net opening and using too large of mesh. The court charged these fishermen $300 and a one-year probation on fishing game violations. If the fishermen violate their probation, they will have to pay an additional $100. Troopers had returned most of the fishermen's nets within 1 to 3 days of confiscation. Troopers are working to return the remaining nets to their owners. Alaska Wildlife Trooper Walter Blajewski issued many of the citations during the June 8th set net opening. He was in the courthouse during the proceedings and talked with KYUK after the arraignments.
You know, the 15 citations that were issued and addressed in court today, there were a lot of man hours on the river by the troopers on the 8th and before the 8th, before the opener, and after the opener. And to have that few of citations, I think, is a better way to look at it than that many citations. There was a lot of fishermen out there doing the right thing, and that's really what we're excited about is that voluntary compliance.
The 15 fishermen were each asked to pay a fine of $300 for these minor violations. Why $300?
The maximum fine for these violations was $500. After consultation with the district attorney's office, we didn't request the maximum fine. This is a subsistence fishery in rural Alaska, in western Alaska. $300 is a significant amount of money. And we thought that was appropriate to the violation.
Most of the defendants who appeared in court, their nets had already been returned. Many of them had been returned within 1 to 3 days. Is that a priority for the troopers to return the nets quickly?
Not typically. Typically, when we seize property as evidence, we retain it until court is done. This is a subsistence fishery. with a very short window that these salmon are in the river around these local villages. So with discussions with our department, the decision was made to try to get these nets that we could identify who the owner was back to them so they could continue to subsistence fish. It's pretty important in the region. It's not a sport fish fishery or commercial fishery. These people are subsistence fishing, and we thought it best to try to return these nets that would otherwise be legal so they can continue their opportunities to subsistence fish.
When a net is confiscated, what happens to it? Where does it go? How is it handled?
So all the nets that we seized as evidence on the opener of the 8th, we took back to the trooper post in Bethel. We had staff lay them out on the ground, dried them. We measured them so we could get a very accurate measurement of the actual length of the net, because when we're measuring them in the field, there's all kind of environmental factors that we get a close measurement, but it's not laid out on a flat piece of concrete with a tape measure. So we want to measure them for accuracy so we can speak intelligently and factually in court about it. After we dried it and measured it, we packaged them up and we tagged them with the people's name on it. The decision on this fishery was made to try to return those. And so we went through a great deal of effort to bring those nets back to those people. Some of them that were close to Bethel came by boat. Some of them that lived in Bethel either picked them up from the office or we delivered them to them by pickup. And the nets that we seized in the outlying areas, who we could identify and contact, we actually flew those back out to them during patrols.
When a net is confiscated, the fish in that net and also the fish on board is also confiscated. What then happens to that fish?
So when we seize a net for evidence, if there's a violation, they can't legally possess those fish. And so we take those fish, document it in our notes in our report, and then we'll find a charity. We call it a charity, but it's usually an established place that has a need for fish and game to help supplement their operation. This year, we started off the Tundra Center, which is the women's shelter in Bethel.
The Tundra Women's Coalition?
Yes, ma'am. They received a lot of the first part of the season fish. They told us we probably have enough. So then there was a at-risk youth fish camp out there on Church Slough. Their staff told us that they could have the kids process this fish and then deliver it to elders or to YK facilities. When we couldn't get a hold of anybody in Bethel because of the late hour, we went down to the boat harbor and other places and tried to find families that could use a fish or two. When we seized fish a long way from Bethel in airplanes and things, we look for local regional charities there. And that could be going to the local village and ask what elder could use a couple fish or what family could use a couple fish. Pretty standard stuff in our job to give seized game meat and seized fish to people in need. And I think that we've been doing a real good job getting that out to people that can effectively process it and get it to people that need it.
Minors not wearing life jackets has also been an issue this fishing season. Will you explain the regulations around life jackets in Alaska?
Yes. So especially in Western Alaska, we have a lot of boating activity and we have a lot of, unfortunately, fatalities in the water. If you're under the age of 13 years, you need to have a life jacket on when you're in a boat, in an open boat or on deck when it's being operated. The law is pretty clear on that. You can't transport a child under the age of 13 unless they're wearing a life jacket, if they're in an open boat or on deck. If you're older than that, there needs to be a life jacket of sufficient size for each person on board. So, you know, if you have three adults, you can't have three children life jackets and vice versa. We look for that. We give a lot of education on that when we talk to boaters. Usually we'll cite for one offense and give warnings on the secondary ones out here. We hand out a lot of kids don't float life jackets when we have them. And if you go to any of the boat harbors around the villages or any of the beaches around the villages, you'll see life jackets hanging by the water. There's really no excuse not to have a life jacket in Western Alaska.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Well, I guess the only thing that I would like to add is, you know, we've had a couple openers since the first one. In my observations, I'm really excited to see that a lot of people out there are trying to do the right thing, and their fishing equipment is squared away, and their life jackets are squared away. I think we get focused on the citations, but really that's a very small percentage of the people that I contact. A majority of the people that I contact are doing it right. And I'm really excited about that, that we have that type of awareness out here.
Trooper Walter Blajewski is an Alaska wildlife trooper based in Bethel. Thank you, Trooper Blajewski.
Thank you.
This is KYUK News. I'm Anna Rose MacArthur. Thanks for listening. Please send your news tips to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for the news in Yukon coming up.